You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the U Talk podcast. As always, I'm Grant Bagby from Torn by Sports.
And I am Joseph Silverswag. How is everybody doing? It is a lovely July day. It is Pac-12 media days. Camp starts in, 6 days? Life is good. I mean, really good right now.
It'll be a lot better when it's game week.
Oh, man.
Can you imagine?
I can't even process how exciting it is that game week is so close.
Closer and closer. Closest game day to us as of right now, August 10th, soccer.
Oh.
Versus the Idaho Vandals. Oh, okay. That's a quick hitter. I guess I should have.
Oh, geez. Look at you. You've got to do the run of the show first.
We're going to hit some more quick hitters. Some awards watch list are hitting some more utes. And then we're going
to get watch list. Oh, and I have another watch list I need to grade. I'm springing this on poor Grant. He doesn't know we're going to talk about this yet, but we are. The Hercules Mata'afa Award watch list. We're going to discuss as a quick hitter. Sorry, Grant. Grant's okay. Like, what? Okay. What is this? I'm totally unprepared for this topic, but it's happening.
All right. Then we're gonna talk media days. We got some things to talk about there. Where the Utes were picked, we'll hit that as well. And then we're gonna talk about what are some of our questions for we want answered with fall camp. So we'll see what happens. As far as some normal business before we get into quick hitters. Hey guys, we could really use reviews and feedback. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you listen, and hit that 5-star button and let us know what we're doing well. If you want to let us know what we're not doing well, email us at utetalk@gmail.com. I myself monitor that email, so if you send it, I'm reading it. Let me know. As an example, we now have a bunch more sound equipment, and the sound quality should be a lot better. That was feedback we received. So we listen.
Yeah, that's that statement coming to you from a brand new AT2020 microphone. Go to Signal Marketing for all your microphone. My father-in-law runs a sound distributor company, so I have the hookup for a lot of equipment, and that's why we've got some cool stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, so
let's talk some football instead.
Quick hitters. Let's see some award list. Hey, I've got a shocking
watch list,
whatever. Really shocking one for you.
Okay.
Mitch Wisch is on the Ray Guy Watch Award. Can you believe
goodness.
It?
A Utah punter on the awards watch list. I really think they should call it the Who is Utah's Punter This Year Award.
And I'd really like to change his nickname. It should be Magical Mitch.
I don't know. It's kind of a mouthful. Like I appreciate
it. It has
what
a nice ring to
there,
it.
But you gotta just go with what's kind of natural.
I used your nickname.
Happens.
I don't know if I like that one.
I like Magical Mitch
a lot better.
The challenge with nicknames, as George Costanza could tell you, is that coming up with your own nickname is a fool's errand. You just have to see what the world, fates conspire.
I can't come up with my own nickname.
T-Bone.
But we can definitely give
Mitch a good nickname.
Whatever. Hey, another shocker. Another special team watch list.
It could be anybody.
I mean, really.
Punt returner. The best punt blocker.
I thought you would have known those ones.
Hands guy in the middle on the field goal unit. Do they give awards for that? They should. Because those guys work hard.
It's Matt Gay for the Lou Groza watch list.
Yes. That's amazing. The only reason Utah's specialists don't win these awards every year is that it would be boring. And so they're like, oh, the guy from Kentucky, sure, whatever. It's kind of like you can't give LeBron the MVP every year. You can't give Udus punter and kicker the award every year. Although there is always deserving kickers out there. Punter, it's Utah's always got the best punter. And I think a lot of that has to do with Whittingham's ownership of special teams and punt coverage and the way that they work together really well. So if you look at the punt return rates, the percentage of punts that were returnable or judged returnable by the opposing team, Utah's consistently at the bottom. And that's as much a coverage issue as it is a punter issue. Of course, you have to make the kick. We've also got Julian Blackman on the Nagurski watch list. That's best defensive player overall. That's a cool one to be on. Okay. Lo Falamaka on his second watch list, the Outland Trophy, which is best offensive lineman. And just as a side, Lo is like number 48 on the 60 and 60 thing that one of the radio stations does. This guy's on two national awards watch lists for one of the best offensive linemen in the whole country. And they're like, well, that BYU left tackle's got a lot of potential. I mean, these lists are ridiculous.
That's just local teams on that list, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, but you could put Lo
in, like, the top couple hundred players nationally based on the watch list. He's supposed to be really, really good this year as an alignment. Then we have Zach Moss on the Doak Walker watch list. That's best running back. And so, you know, it's been a nice crop of awards and accolades. And again, it's exactly what you want to see. It's the stars or the people we hope are going to be stars of this team, although we'd all like to see a little less of Magical Mitch. I can't even do it. A little less of Mitch Wish.
Magical Mitch.
Magical Mitch.
You know you like it.
I don't know. I mean, you know, we'll see. I'm trying it out. We'll see how it kind of rolls up. But anyway, you know, it's nice to see him better than not being on the watch list, and we'll
see what happens. So should we talk some Pac-12 media days?
Yeah, today is media days. There are it's just one day. In years past, it's been two. They're kind of compressing it down. The interviews for the Utes start at 2:30 Utah time. There's Whittingham. And who are the other guys? Chase Hansen is there, and Lo Falamaka is there as well. And you should take a look at Chase just because I don't know if you've seen him, seen the pictures of him and stuff on the jet, but the linebacker size looks good on Chase Hansen. He looks really, really good and comfortable at his weight finally. And so, I mean, that's reading tea leaves, but it's a good sign. Yeah.
So the fun thing that everyone seems to pay attention to is who the media picks for Pac-12, who win the Pac-12, and then the division winners, of course. And shockingly, really shockingly, USC got picked to beat Utah.
Unbelievable that people would project USC to win the South every single year. Of course, they win more often than not, so can you blame him, really? But my favorite tidbit from the voting is actually that, and Mark, you know, we're teasing, you're like, what did Utah do? What did Utah do? But is the guy, the bright light, who said UCLA was going to win the Pac-12 South. And I just imagine this UCLA homer kind of in his basement. And then Chip Kelly's going to be like, and then he's going to play left tackle, and then he's going to drop back, and he's going to throw a 300-yard pass. This is actually Chip Kelly in our media member's mind, who is playing all the positions for UCLA. UCLA is not going to win the Pac-12 South. They're not going to win a lot of games this year. They don't have any good players, and those are
Kelly's the coach.
He sure is. Although I just have whole sort of big picture doubts about Chip Kelly. It's been a long time since he's been a successful college coach. The game has changed a lot.
Yep.
And what used to be his innovations are now standard.
Yeah.
And the game's adapted, and teams like Utah in particular have started developing new defenses that are much more effective against what he did. So he's got a learning curve.
Yeah. No, it'll be interesting.
And it's all about the Jimmies and Joes, right? And they're cupboards bare at UCLA right now.
Well, yeah. What I find interesting is, so if I'm looking at this right, I'm seeing one vote for Colorado.
Who? I mean, okay, you get Chip Kelly's stars in your eyes, but who the heck votes for Colorado? I mean, what were the standings last year? Hang on.
I mean, why you're looking that up? I mean, we got. See, I could almost see like the three votes for Arizona, right? Khalil Tate,
Arizona, like absolutely. Cool. I thought they might even get whatever. A few more votes, but
so I could see that, and I can see like sure the Chip Kelly love for UCLA, and I totally understand USC being picked to win the division, but who picked Colorado?
We don't get to know. Nobody will tell us who they voted for, which is sad because I'd like to dox them on Twitter for their idiotic decision. Let's see. Colorado finished 2-7 in conference last year, 5-7 over. They didn't even make a bowl game. And whoever this person is thinks that they're going to knock off all of these teams and go on to
the conference title game.
Yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like, it's a...
That person is banking on USC, Utah, and Arizona, like...
eating each other.
Yeah.
I think there's a perception of the South as this kind of muddled conference, which it has been in the past, where 6-3 is often good enough to win. I don't think there's any reason to project it as that kind of division this year. I think it is a two-team race with a spoiler, and everybody else is kind of garbage or should be expected to not be competitive in the division. USC and Utah are the clear front runners, and I think the vote reflects that.
USC
picked up 22, Utah picked up 14.
Yeah.
Arizona's a spoiler picked up 3, and I would have hoped they'd pick up more like 5 or 6 votes because Khalil Tate's probably the best player in the South right now. If you're looking, maybe Zach Moss, but Khalil Tate's pretty special. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of all of our college football players who religiously listen to this podcast are going, no, wait, I'm the best player. And you might be right at the end of the season, but if you're, you know, going to pick a name.
Look, I would love for them. Prove me wrong. I'd love every single Utah player to prove us wrong.
Oh, yeah. Zach Moss, go off. Get mad at me and go off for 2,500 yards this year. Just to stick it to Joseph Silverswag on that one podcast. I think that's a good idea.
Sure.
Zach's listening right now. He's writing it down. He sends me fan mail every 2 or 3 days.
And there's going to be like a Jay Silverswag icon on the bottom of his shoe.
Yep.
And
yeah, he's like going to like get a tattoo, Jay Silverswag. Yep. That's definitely going to happen because we have a huge impact on the psychological state of college football players, Grant and I.
Definitely. Well, I don't know. Is there anything else to say about Media Days? I mean, the interviews are the fun part, and that's later today.
Yeah, and we'll see what they do. I mean, I just encourage everybody to watch them. Our recaps wouldn't be as interesting as the interviews themselves.
Yeah.
I am maybe the only person in the world who has never been a fan of one Mike Leach. Everybody, like, gets their popcorn ready, and I just think the guy's kind of a dummy. And
you got to admit, it's funny. You don't find it funny at all?
Yeah, but the man's a college football coach. He's not there to be funny. He's there to talk about college football.
So is that what bothers you? Is it's not about college football, so that's what bothers you about it?
Because
Leach is funny.
What bothers me about him is that he does not display a total passion for the game. He seems really interested in the things he likes about football and just doesn't care about the other stuff. And I think, A, that makes him a not as good coach, and it shows in the teams that he runs out there. But B, it just rubs me the wrong way because I want the coaches to be, you know, myopically focused on football because that's how I imagine them in my head.
Okay. I mean, I'm okay with some entertainment value. I think,
but that's how I feel.
It's going to be interesting with Leach specifically. Like, he's not, the questions aren't going to be all football. They're going to be some mental, I would hope, some mental illness questions.
It's just like word salad junk. It's not, I don't know. I don't find it.
I think on media days when everyone's looking for content to talk about and people are expecting to talk about him, I think he actually has the potential to have a good impact based on what happened with their quarterback.
Here we are talking about him. Yeah. So,
I mean, that's something. What his team's going through, I mean, it's tough losing a player.
That's a good point. And that may be a particular role for which he is uniquely better suited than other coaches because he cares more about other things. And he's not going to be like, well, yeah, you got to play the game, you know, like just some coach speak garbage. So it'll be nice to get some real raw statements from
him. I'll just put this out there. I'm all for mental illness awareness, and this is an opportunity to get it back into the forefront, more people talking about it. So I will be cheering for those questions and people to talk about that at media days. I know it won't live long, but any awareness is good.
Every time. And I think we're doing better in general of as a culture of making a point of having this conversation every time something happens, which may seem repetitive or not productive, but that's the point. The point is to have the conversation over and over again so people get more comfortable having the conversation and saying, this person's not well, and understanding that it's kind of the same thing as a physical health condition. You kind of replace anxiety or depression with a word like diabetes, and it gets a little easier to understand what people are going through. You know, somebody says to you, I can't go to the event this weekend because my wife's diabetes is acting up. You say, oh, yeah, well, take care of that. That's important. They say, well, it's my wife's anxiety is really high right now. We want people to react to that in the same way and to recognize that sometimes those issues are just as life-threatening.
So. Yeah. So now that we've gotten the serious stuff out of the way.
Back to fun. Camp.
All right.
Camp.
Now, you're not going to get as excited about camp as Fotu last week, did you?
No.
Are you?
No.
Are you sure?
Only one thing brings me to that height of hard eyes emoji.
Was your wife jealous? Did she listen?
She does not. There is no way in the world that she will ever listen to this podcast. I mean, that's a 1,000-to-1 odds I wouldn't take. So never going to happen, guys.
All right. Well, let's talk camp. We've got the whole idea is to talk about what questions we have about the team that hopefully fall camp might be able to either address or answer as we get into those first couple games. I mean, it's not in the plans to talk about it, but I'll just bring it up here. I'm really intrigued to see how much the first couple games change based on the new redshirt rule, because I feel like they're going to become like preseason, even more so preseason games.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, there's a couple of different, and I don't know how strategically the staff thinks about these things. My instinct when a rule changes is to be very strategic, say, how are we going to react to this and implement a plan and all this stuff. I'm a administrative lawyer, so rules change and I react to those changes professionally, and that's kind of how I think. But the strategy, you've got sort of two choices. You can say we're going to run out a preseason second half unit and try and get experience for these guys. And the other thing is you could decide is to kind of husband your redshirt games and say Tyler Huntley could get injured. So instead of running Jack Tuttle out there in the third quarter against NIU, we're going to run Shelley out there so that if Huntley goes down, Tuttle has redshirt games available to play against you know, Colorado. And it's really a strategic question. My instinct, my expectation is that they're going to use the former strategy, that they're going to say, we're just going to run guys out there and worry about injuries later, because it seems like the Utes place a really high value on game experience for their players.
No, I agree.
And they wouldn't want to lose it. You'd feel dumb if it gets to be the BYU game and you haven't played Tuttle a down and he's got four games of eligibility. So to refresh everybody, the new rule says you can play a redshirt player in up to four games for the whole season and they don't lose their redshirt. So it's a big game changer for that.
Yeah. All right. So let's start. You want to start offense or defense in these camp answers?
Let's give Huntley the ball first and start on offense.
Start on offense. All right. How about this? Every other?
Yeah. Sounds good.
So I'll go first. I'm intrigued to see about the running backs. So everyone's talked about Zach Moss and how awesome he is, but Shine's been pretty awesome when he's been healthy. So I'm wondering how much health he has, because I feel like with both of them in the backfield or as options, we are going to see better productivity from both of them.
Yes, I think that's probably true. And the question is Shine a viable option?
Yep.
And we don't know.
We know
before he was hurt that he was great. I mean, a really talented player, a really good breakaway speed, violent runner, everything you want. And then the first injury, you don't know, right? But the first injury was a ligament tear, knee ligament. And then he had another injury after that, was totally unrelated. And the question is he still as fast, still as explosive? And I feel like that's a question we'll get answered in camp, which is nice. I mean, a lot of these questions, well, we're going to have a guess, but we're not going to know until we actually see them play. But it's only going to be two or three runs in pads before we go, okay, Shine's back or Shine's not back.
Yeah.
And we'll see. I mean, we'll just have to see.
Yeah, no, I'm sure I'm
one of the... agree. If there's a two-headed monster back there, you get some time off for players and a little more rest.
Less injuries.
And then two back sets, which Troy Taylor wants to use more, and I don't think really had the roster to do as much as he wanted last year. And this year he's got scat backs and more running backs, and he'll be able to do those things more.
Yeah, and I might be the only person worried about Shine, but that's my question.
No, all right, what's yours? That's a very fair concern. Mine, so I'm going to go defense now, or are we doing both offense?
Whatever you want.
I should have figured this out. My defensive question is, and I've talked about this a lot, and I'm going to keep talking about it because I think it's really important, strong side defensive end. Bradley and I needs to have somebody on the other side of the line who demands blockers and who demands chip blockers in particular, because the way that teams defend the pass rush against Utah is running backs and tight ends to help. But you can only do that so much before you don't have any players on the field anymore. And if you've got two guys who require help for the tackle, you're in really good shape. And it's not so much that I worry when the Utes aren't going to have that player as that I want to see who it's going to be. And there's three or four different options. We talked about them at length. But that's my – last week. But that's my big question is who is going to set themselves apart from the pack and
take over. And I don't think you're going to get an answer to that one, not for a few games in.
And that may be true. I mean – You don't really see with a position like that what a player is made of until there's a live quarterback and a tackle they're working against who they don't eat dinner with every other day.
Yeah, I mean, the other problem with, and we should have said this to start this conversation about camp, is that there's not going to be a ton of observation time, right?
No,
I think we get like the media gets like 15 minutes a
day. And they get mad about it, and they'll like cancel stuff at the last minute.
Yep.
And they specifically design what they show you in the observation periods. They give you very little information. We just happen to be at the part of practice where Drew Lisk is, you know, practicing punting. So watch that for 15 minutes. I mean, that's slight exaggeration, but not much. They don't show you what you want to see, and they know that.
And that's the point.
Yeah.
They want to. I mean, we really won't have any potential real – I would say almost – I mean, I guess I just don't know. We won't know anything until the first game. Maybe.
I think there's more than nothing.
I mean, outside of the Shine, sure. Well, how about this?
We'll see some runs from Shine. Yeah, what's your next question? Because I think we get information about that too.
Yeah. So my main question is just the wide receiver core in general. What are we going to do? We lost key contributors, two or three wide receivers last year. I'm blanking on names for some reason right now, which is just stupid. Since the transfer
from Oregon was awesome. I'll give you a hint. He had size triple XL gloves.
Yep.
Really big hands that nobody could stop talking. It's Darren Carrington. Yes, I'm not going to leave you waiting too long. Sorry.
Losing Carrington, a couple other guys, it's like, who's going to fill the role? And then also, I'm curious to see, you know, a couple years back after a mission now, How fast is Covey? Is he still the bold guy who never calls for a fair catch on the punt?
Is he gonna stop on the 30-yard line and like go over to the opposing team's coach and be like, "Have you heard the good word?" I don't know. I don't know how what impact on his psyche all this stuff.
I'm pretty sure that won't happen.
Yeah, he's got Books of Mormon tucked into his socks.
Well, that's the new padding at the side.
Yeah,
hip padding.
Those are his pads.
Book of Mormon in each one.
His touchdown celebration. I don't know.
Hands it to the nearest.
Sorry, I'm being insensitive, but it's fun. He looks good. He's doesn't look
not heavy. Everything's based on looks, Joseph.
Everything is based on
you looks. Seem to think about looks a lot.
Yeah, well, you know, he's but you know, you wonder if he ate. Where did he go? What country was he in?
Oh, it was out of the country. I don't remember.
Yeah, like too many papooses or something, and you know, he comes back a linebacker, but. No, he looks himself.
No, he doesn't look like. It'll be interesting. I'm just intrigued, right?
The quote I've heard from inside the program is, quote, "Covey is Covey."
All right, then.
So that's a good sign.
Look, we'll know. I feel like we'll know his first punt return.
Yeah, and what's cool about wide receivers, I agree, there's a lot of questions about that. Bronson Boyd is somebody I'm watching because he's got the potential to be a breakout star for the Utes and has been pumped up for a while by the staff. Yeah. But what's cool about that is that's the kind of thing that they'll show you in the observation period. You know, they'll dial up a couple of long pass plays and, you know, screen passes and things. So you get to see the guys kind of have fun and celebrate their athleticism and things like that. So I think we'll get a sense who that is and who the Lynchmans are going to be. And, of course, they release depth charts, I think, only twice. I think they'll release one at the beginning and one at the end. And we can kind of read the tea leaves there and see who's standing out and if somebody moves into a position they weren't in before. The other guy I'm watching, my big one, is Yasmeen, Thomas Yasmeen. He is a international product. He's a 6'5", 235-240-pound guy who played rugby, never played a down of football in his life. And I don't know the name of the position, but akin to a wide receiver, he would be on the outside of the pack. They would toss him the ball, and he would be handling the ball in space and scoring touchdowns. And he's listed right now as a tight end. And physically, he is a prototypical, just absolute dream as a tight end. I think my instinct is he's going to wind up on defense because that's what the staff does, and because a prototypical tight end and a prototypical defensive end are very similar physical types. But as a rugby player, he was much more dynamic with the ball in his hands than as a tackler. So I'm just kind of keeping an eye to see if he's really being used and utilized as a receiver, and what his hands are like, and if they're putting him in that role shows that they really intend to keep him there, or if he's just sitting on the sidelines, it means they're probably planning to convert him to a DE at some point.
Well, if he's on the sidelines, I almost feel like the dude's got a ton to learn. I mean, he's coming from...
Yeah, I mean, you don't draw too much.
There's going to be a lot of learning no matter what position he's in. And then if you add a switching of the position, mm-hmm. then he's going to be backtracking a bit. I think...
And, of course, tight end is tough because you have to pass block as well as run routes. And that's a very new skill for a rugby player. That's not something he has any experience doing.
So I think... if he's at tight end and getting any kind of snaps, he's probably going to be there for the near future.
Yeah, and I mean
probably longer.
From a talent, physical talent perspective, he's in the 4 to 5 star range. He's a one of a kind physical specimen. The question is how quickly and can he pick up the skills that he needs. And I think if he can, they're going to try him at tight end first, and if he can pick up those skills, we'll know pretty fast. Because you think about, not to put too lofty of a name on it, but you think about the dominant tight ends. You mostly see them in the NFL because it's rare to find a college player who can do that. But a guy like, is it Antonio Gates, is that the one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Probably one of the best tight ends ever.
You could just stick him out there. You don't have to, or Jimmy Graham, and it's not about pass blocking necessarily, but as a receiver, a guy who is that big and that fast and who can jump and catch is virtually unstoppable.
Well, especially when they're going to have a linebacker or safety guard.
Right. I mean, there's just nobody ridiculous. Who can cover them, and in college, it's doubly true.
Yep.
I mean, they're the human beings with the speed and size to handle that kind of thing are few and far between, and most of them aren't on college rosters. And so my feeling is that if he has potential as a tight end, they're just going to find a way to get him out there because he's going to be so hard to stop. And if he doesn't, they'll say, all right, let's start working on turning you into a monster DE, which is not a bad thing, but
make
I think
plenty of money doing that too.
Oh yeah, but I mean, tight end is such a special role because, especially in the college game, it just absolutely breaks a defense because, like we were saying, there's nobody on the field who can cover that guy, and all you can do is hit him hard enough that he doesn't want to catch the ball, and not every team has that guy either. So
right.
We'll see.
All right. My next thing is, how is Huntley's reads specifically on the RPO? Like, how often is he handing off? I just don't want to see Huntley running as much as he did last year. I'd like to see Moss and Shine and DHC. I'd like to see those guys running and not Huntley as much. It's just looking for injuries too much. And as much as, look, I like Huntley, I like Tuttle, like, I think there's plenty of things to be excited about in the quarterback position, I just like him not to be running with the ball as much.
Yeah, I mean, he had 168 attempts in 10 games. So that's almost 17 rushes per game last year, which is, and I did an analysis. There's a set of quarterbacks who do that. What's the name of the Louisville Cardinal quarterback?
Oh gosh,
the Heisman kid. Anyway, that kid, you all know him. He runs about that much, 15 to 20 runs per game. And there's a couple of other guys. The Quinton Flowers was last year's quarterback for, I think, USF. He ran that much. These guys run that much, but they that's a very specific offensive choice, and I think it's pretty clear that that's not the choice that Troy Taylor wants to make.
Lamar Jackson.
That's him. That's the boy. He's good, man. He's good. And so you want to see that number get down, not low, but like 8 to 12 rushes per game.
Sure, but not almost 20.
I don't know. No, I mean, that's that became evident that Huntley is not a good enough runner that it's worth taking the injury risk that many times a game. And isn't durable, and yet he's not Cam Newton. He's not durable enough to be out there like that. But I just don't think that's a question we're likely to see.
Oh, we're not going to see that one.
Because that's exactly the kind of information that they will expressly avoid giving us in observation periods. They'll have designed runs. They'll have designed passes. And they're never going to be putting Huntley in a position where he's authentically making that decision. I mean, they may call an RPO, but he's already going to know what he's going to do beforehand.
There's no reason for them to expose that and then have guys like us talking about it and then, you know, it being on Twitter or on the message boards.
And we're probably not going to find out for a few weeks. I mean, let's look at the – what is it? It's the FCS guys and then NIU, is that right? Mm-hmm. The first 2 weeks. Huntley's probably going to be mostly a pocket passer, mostly handing off. I mean, Utah should steamroll both of those teams. NIU should be pretty good this year. They were picked to win their division in their media day. So don't sleep on them entirely, but still, there's a big gap. And they're going to really play close to the vest. I think in particular with Huntley, both because you don't want to expose anything and because it's a good sort of a learning experience for him. If you can demonstrate to him how well the offense works when he's not keeping, it's going to give him more confidence going to the Washington game that, yeah, I've seen Zach Moss take it 60 yards over and over again. So, yeah, I'll let him keep it. And that might help.
All right. You're up, buddy. What's your question?
I'm always interested in the trenches. I love the line. We have an unusually solidified offensive line, especially at starter. We know it's going to be Jackson Barton. We know it's going to be Johnny Capra. We know it's going to be Lo Falamaka, Jordan Agassiva, Darren Paulo. So I'm really going to be watching. I'm going to be watching right guard in general because I'm curious if Agassiva really has that position locked down as a starter. There's some good talent out there. Paul Tawala is really good. Mo Unitoa is really good. So they might take it over. And the other guy I'm watching with great interest is Nick Ford. Nick Ford is we talked about him before, but is a very exciting tackle prospect and could take over this year the starting role from either Paulo. He's not going to take Jackson Barton's spot, but he could move Jackson Barton to right tackle, which I think is a more natural position for Jackson, and play left tackle and put Darren Paulo on the bench. So that's possible, and that's what he's trying to do. And you're not going to see for sure whether or not that's going to happen, but I'm going to be in the observation periods closely watching to see when 55 is on the field and see how he performs against Utah's defensive ends, particularly if he gets to go up against the ones. You know, I could watch Anai versus Nick Ford all day. I mean, that's a fun, titanic matchup there.
No, that should, yeah. And ultimately, the offensive line is just so critical. I'm always watching it. Like, I'm going to be intrigued to see how good they are. But I don't have, like, a specific question about them, if that makes sense. But it's a...
I think if you're watching a specific sort of whole O-line question, it's how do they respond in the RPO?
And yeah.
Have they,
oh, big time.
Have
not
they advanced
close.
In their ability to... pass protect aggressively enough to open holes for the run.
Because right.
RPO is this weird blocking space where you're still taking a step back, usually in run blocking, your first step is forward. But you also have to be aggressive and hold the line, and that's a weird place for a lineman to be.
Well, plus the whole thing that gave them troubles all last year with the RPO is the fact that they take that step back. There's a good pass protection, and then they think that a run has potentially happened, and they end up 6 yards down the field, yeah. And the penalty comes. So I guess
that's a huge pain, and I wonder it's hard to see how you fix that apart from realizing that that rule is kind of antiquated, because the rule is designed to keep tackles from running routes, right, and confusing
right.
defenses by being ineligible receivers acting like receivers. So even though you can't throw to 77, they're running in a way that a linebacker sort of instinctually is covering them, and that leaves a tight end open for a pass, and that's not fair, right? So that's why you set up the rule that way, so that the linemen can't run routes. But in the modern game, with the way the time it takes plays to develop and things like that, just saying linemen must stay within 5 yards when a pass is thrown it's kind of a crappy rule at this point. And you see it called in all of the – not just the Utes, although it's very frustrating for Ute fans, but all over the game. And you go – that it wasn't like they were doing anything bad, or they were just doing their job really well. They just drove that guy into the turf, which is exactly what they're supposed to do. 5 yards, like 4 steps for a guy who's 6'7"
or less.
Yeah, I mean, they move fast, so it's a dumb rule that ought to be changed. But until then, you got to work with it, right? And will they be able to?
I don't know. My final question that I have is, I'm intrigued to see how Gary Anderson impacts the defensive line, going into the season, whatever else. I just think that Gary Anderson being back with the Utes coaching staff and focusing on the defensive line and then being there to help in general with game plan and whatever else is just a big benefit. And I'm intrigued to see what kind of changes we might see or improvements.
I mean, that's for me, that's the question of the season. That's the difference between an 8 or a 9 win season that you're happy about and a 10, 11, 12 win regular season.
Wait, did you just say 12?
Yeah, I just said 12. There's a distinct probability. Utah is a top 20 run defense with one of the worst rates in the entire country on third and short. They defended 24% of third and 1 to 3 yards successfully, 124th in the country and 115th in the country the year before that. So it's bad, even though otherwise they're top 20 run D. If they can fix that one problem so you can't run on them in third and short, and that is Gary Anderson's baby, right? Is that particular issue of D linemen just punching another team in the mouth? That defense is unstoppable. There's no weakness. And that's a playoff caliber team. So with that hefty dose of Kool-Aid, 3 packets in the jug.
Well, with a lot of sugar, so it's
oh,
not
man.
Taint.
Go for it, guys. Drink up. I'm
me. You own it. It's cool. You own that Kool-Aid and you
drink.
Are making it and enjoying it. Just put some ice in there. Make it nice and cold. Well, look, guys, until next time. Oh, don't forget reviews, ratings, feedback. UteTalk@gmail.com. Until next time, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk. Brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UteTalk Podcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.